Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand. Created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
What I saw was a continuation of the same thing. And the same thing is this. No heavy lifting since January. Really no progress this year.
Republican Congressman Christopher Shays of Connecticut, a longtime supporter of the war in Iraq, as you may know, now changing his position to call for a timetable for American troops to stop fighting. In a few minutes, we'll play an extended excerpt of Shays' interview with NPR over the weekend. But here we are on the day after Labor Day. Welcome back to any of you who've been away for much of the summer. And here we all are. 1 week before the New York State primary, 9 weeks before the November election, with control of Congress at stake this year. The experts say control of the House is very much up for grabs. Control of the Senate could also change to a Democratic majority, but it's less likely. We'll be following on this program very closely, at very least, the contested congressional races in our listening area, and that includes the race between Shays and Diane Farrell in Southwest Connecticut, the Mike Ferguson, Linda Stender House race in New Jersey, and the Aronson Garrett race in New Jersey, the Kane Menendez Senate race in New Jersey, and the Lieberman Lamont Senate race in Connecticut, of course. One of the big reasons Republicans are vulnerable is the war in Iraq. Polls show most Americans don't think it's going well and don't consider it anymore to be part of the war on terror. And that's an impression that Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld tried to change in a recent speech.
Some seem not to have learned history's lessons. Can we truly afford to believe that somehow, some way, vicious extremists can be appeased?
But Rummy may be one of the biggest liabilities for Republican congressional candidates. Senator Barbara Boxer, maybe you've heard this, is introducing a no-confidence resolution designed to force Republicans onto the record as supporting Rumsfeld's job performance or not in an up or down vote. Either way, it's a political liability for them. In a Meet the Press debate on Sunday, Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum and his Democratic challenger Bob Casey disagreed about Rumsfeld. Casey first.
Accountability, I think, means replacing Donald Rumsfeld. Rick and I disagree on that. It means finding out how and whether we were lied to with regard to intelligence.
I think Secretary Rumsfeld has done a fine job as the defense secretary, and the problems that we are confronting are problems of an enemy that's a very potent enemy.
Joining me now to look more closely at the battle for control of Congress this fall are two guests, John Dickerson, chief political correspondent for Slate.com, and Jessica Yellen, White House correspondent for ABC News. John, welcome back. Jessica, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
And John, I noticed you did a piece on Slate about that Casey Santorum debate. Who do you think won?
Well, I think it was largely a draw. I mean, I think, but a draw really hurts Santorum. He's way back in the polls, and he needs to make up ground. And one of the ways he was going to do it is by sort of digging into Casey in that debate, and he didn't really do it. They traded shots, but in the end, I think it was probably a wash.
Jessica, this confidence, no confidence vote on Rumsfeld. Did the Democrats have the power as the minority party to bring this to the floor?
All that matters is that they have the power to make it a significant issue. And if they can get it to the floor in the Senate, all the better. But for the White House and for the GOP in general, they know that they have to react now that it's in the news, and that's enough.
And what is the political calculus of doing this at the height of the campaign?
Well, it's to question the president's entire strategy in prosecuting the war on terror. The GOP has made it clear that they think their strong point, their selling point, is that they're the best on national security. And if they have failed in that, then they lose on their most winning issue, and that means they could lose the election. So the Democrats are hitting them where it hurts the most, and the GOP is really in a weak position right now, they have to figure out a way to counter the growing dissatisfaction with both Rumsfeld and the war.
So, John, what do you think about the politics of this as it affects people like Rick Santorum, who we heard in that clip still supports Rumsfeld, and Tom Kaine Jr., the Republican running for Senate in New Jersey, who now is calling for Rumsfeld's resignation?
Well, Kaine's a great example. I mean, the problem, what Democrats are trying to do is focus on Rumsfeld because Rumsfeld makes the conversation about Iraq. Republicans are trying to make the conversation, and the president in particular, trying to make the conversation about this global war on terror. They hope by blowing the issue up and making it larger and larger, they can sort of get away from the day-to-day difficulties of what's going on in Iraq and the mistakes and the mission accomplished and all of the various problems along the way, and trying to get people to focus on this bigger, gauzier, longer-term struggle. They think and in fact, polling shows, people tend to trust Republicans. It's one of the last areas that people still do, trust Republicans on fighting the war on terror. So if Republicans can talk about that, that's great, because their numbers on Iraq are so bad. And Donald Rumsfeld is sort of the most direct way to get at the difficulty Republicans are having on Iraq. And so for any Republican, you have to decide whether you're going to defend Rumsfeld or not, and that's awfully tricky.
So candidates like Christopher Shays, the GOP incumbent in a close race in Connecticut, who we'll hear more from in a minute, have to take a stand, at least in the media and maybe on the record if it ever gets to the House floor.
Well, that's right. If what's basically they're trying to do is figure out where the swing and independent voters are, and those voters are the ones who have soured on Iraq. And we've noticed it's not just Shays. John McCain, who a lot of politicians follow in terms of thinking he pretty much knows where the right place to be, has been very, very critical of Rumsfeld over the last many, many months. And independent and swing voters probably won't penalize any candidate who comes out and calls for Rumsfeld's resignation.
We're talking about the battle for control of Congress in this fall's elections with Jessica Yellen, White House correspondent for ABC News, and John Dickerson, chief political correspondent for Slate.com. I also want to tell our listeners, especially if you're just back from summer vacation, that we will begin this year's edition of 30 Issues in 30 Days on this program later this month, examining 30 issues relevant to the November elections. And we're compiling that list now, and we want to know what issues you think are important to discuss. So email your issues suggestions to Brian Larashow at WNYC.org. Please put the words 30 Issues in the subject line. Jessica, the president is giving a speech today, part of a series of speeches he's giving to try to pump up support for the war in Iraq before the election. And I'm looking at an AP story from less than an hour ago that says terror strategy is updated by the White House. I know you're on this story, too. Are they changing something in the terror strategy?
Yeah, this is awfully familiar. You might remember that a few months ago they unveiled a plan for victory in Iraq. It was a glossy 30-page book on how they're going to win in Iraq, and they handed it out to all the morning show correspondents, and everyone ran to their cameras early in the morning and said, this is what the White House is going to do. It happened all over again today. At 6 a.m., they called a bunch of reporters in to hand out this new booklet, which they say is a slight update on a plan they had going back a few years to 2003. It takes into account the formation of the Department of Homeland Security, et cetera. It's not a stretch to say that this really looks like a PR effort to do exactly what John just said, which is broaden the discussion from Iraq to the larger war on terror, to make us all talk about the struggle that the president thinks he's effective at communicating on, and that is the fight against al-Qaeda in an international sense. And also, frankly, to gin up a little bit of fear. I mean, there's a lot in here that makes them really sound, you know, as scary as the terrorists are, but constantly remind us that this is the real threat out there. And the timing is no coincidence. A number of morning shows, I'm sure, were planning to do stories this morning about the danger facing the Republican Party in November, and instead ended up leading their shows with the president's new terrorism plan. Very effective PR from the White House today.
We can take your phone calls on any of this for our guests at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or email Brian Larashow at WNYC.org. Our inbox is always open. John, that's a major dynamic in this control for Congress battle that Jessica just pointed to. The Republicans have won in 2002 and 2004, at least in part on portraying the Democrats as weak on national security, and the Democrats would say fear-mongering. How differently do you think that's set up to play out in 2006 than the last two cycles?
Well, you're exactly right. The Republicans are looking like they're going to do the same thing. The problem is that this time you have Republican candidates in difficult spots kind of running against that message. We talked already about Republican candidates running away from Donald Rumsfeld. So it's going to be a lot harder for Republicans now. And also the public doesn't trust this administration on the question of Iraq. And so the numbers for this administration and this Congress in terms of Iraq, which on the one hand the administration says is the central front on the war on terror, so if voters are looking at that, the running on stewardship of the terror question won't work very well for Republicans. Having said that, again, I go back to those numbers where you ask people, well, who do you trust to take care of you when it comes to the larger issue of terrorism? And they tend to pick Republicans. And they also, even if they're unhappy with Republicans on these security issues or on Iraq in specific, they are not rushing into the arms of Democrats on this set of issues. And that's a problem for Democrats.
And I can guarantee that will be one of the 30 issues in 30 days that we take a close look at starting September 26th. Do voters, should you view the Democrats as weaker on security than the Republicans in 2006? John, some of the math on this, the Democrats need 15 seats to take control of the House. Do you have a count of how many House races are actually in play? I noticed that today's Washington Times says the Republicans estimate 36 Republican seats are in play, while the AFL-CIO in last week's New York Times reportedly identified 56. What do you think?
Well, this is, of course, part of the silliness we're going to see between now and Election Day. Republicans will try and downplay the number of seats that are in play. Groups traditionally affiliated with the Democratic Party and Democrats will play up the number of seats in play. I think it's probably close to 40. If you talk to Republicans, even several months ago, when the official Republican line was that there were, you know, maybe 20-some-odd seats, they were saying you're crazy. It's at least 40. So I would think, you know, 40, 50 races are in play. And of course, it depends on what you mean in play. And we'll see in the next couple of weeks how things shake out. Americans will start paying a little bit more attention now that school started again and their vacations are over, and we'll be able to get a better lock on that number. But
yeah,
the number certainly increased over the summer.
And Jessica, I want to replay that clip of Donna Rumsfeld that we used a little while ago, invoking the history of appeasement of the Nazis before World War II and trying to make the analogy with Democrats today. Let's listen.
Some seem not to have learned history's lessons. Can we truly afford to believe that somehow, some way, vicious extremists can be appeased?
Now, Jessica, the secretary wound up writing some kind of letter, not quite apologizing, but clarifying his remarks after that. Why was that so controversial?
He sure did. They at the Pentagon that morning, they were very riled up. They thought that the press misreported it. The press was, quote, ridiculous, they said. It infuriated a lot of actual veterans who felt that there was no parallel between people who are honest objectors to the fight in Iraq and people who were silent through the Nazi mistreatment. And so it was a very emotional matter he touched on, and so it didn't exactly work politically well for the administration, but it did get a lot of press. What's really it served the purpose of letting both Rumsfeld and then also Cheney that week politicize the issue and really hit the critics, and the president stepped in and gave a speech several days later in which he could rise above it all and sound very, you know, neutral and sort of focused on the large war, et cetera, or the long war, as they're now calling it. But the other, you know, sort of fascinating part of all this is the language they're using. You know, they're Rumsfeld's drawing parallels to the Nazis. The president now today, they told us that they think this is more like the Cold War and making a parallel to the communists. The terrorists are the shadowy force that's global and using new techniques.
And we have to take a break. We'll continue there in just a minute, including your phone calls and an extended excerpt of Christopher Shays with his new position. Stay with us.
I think he's been a terrific president. Absolutely.
Senator Rick Santorum, Republican of Pennsylvania, standing by his man, President Bush, in the Santorum-Casey debate. On Meet the Press on Sunday, Senator Santorum, considered one of those vulnerable Republicans in the Senate with control of Congress at stake in the November elections. We're talking about the race for control of Congress with John Dickerson, Slate.com's chief political correspondent, and Jessica Yellen, White House correspondent for ABC News. Jessica, how hard are the politics of that for someone like Santorum with the president's approval rating so low?
It's incredibly difficult. We've seen the president walk into states where the Republican candidates just haven't spent any time with him. He was just in Maryland, and he was on his own when he was visiting there. So for Santorum to sort of stick by the president is a significant departure from what a lot of the candidates are doing around the country. They just don't want to be seen as too closely allied with the president, who is closely allied with Iraq, which is just not a winning issue in voters' minds.
Let's take a phone call, and in fact, it's on that Casey Santorum debate on Meet the Press, and it's Giovanni in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
So?
I was watching that debate, and as I watched that debate, and I'm no apologist for George W. Bush. I mean, I actually detest the man and his policies and his programs. But Bob Santorum, Mr. Santorum, Senator Santorum, you know, that debate highlighted the problems the Democrats and Republicans are going to have. Santorum came in well-focused, well-prepared, very articulate, knew his position, and expressed it very well. Casey just pretty much sat on the background, nodding his head and not offering any kind of alternative or any kind of plan. If the Democrats think that the president is losing momentum, the only thing that's going to overcome them is the fact that their inertia at some point is going to become greater than the momentum that the president is losing. And at least the president is taking some steps to...
All right, let's see if John Dickerson from Slate.com, who reviewed that debate on the website today or the other day, agrees with your take. I didn't see it. John, do you also think that Casey looked passive?
Well, at times, yes. I think it's a fair enough criticism. I think two reactions. One, Casey was less passive than the rap against him, and he was clearly at pains to show that he could be assertive. In several instances, he sort of theatrically turned to Santorum and posed direct questions to him, and he controlled a little bit the early part of the debate. But on Iraq, he offered essentially generalities, and then when he talked about budget issues, he was once again offering generalities. But when you're up by as much as 18 points, as he is in the most recent Gallup poll, and outside of the margin of error in the average of other polls, generalities are working just fine for him. And Santorum's basically his approach is to talk about this larger war on Islamofascism, and he's not making the case. And so without those two things in play and Casey up, it seems to me the dynamic doesn't change, and Casey goes on to win, at least in that particular race in Pennsylvania.
And I guess the Rumsfeld confidence, no confidence vote push by the Democrats in a way also lets their party off the hook, because they can denounce the job that Rumsfeld is doing without actually taking a position on what to do differently in Iraq, since most Democrats running for Congress, tell me if my impression is wrong on this, seem to not be taking the John Kerry, Jack Murtha position that we should set a timetable for withdrawal.
Right. I mean, the Democrats have several different positions. There's no unified Democratic position. And so the hope for them is to basically keep poking at the Republicans, have one answer to the question of what you would do, which essentially is actually in a lot of ways not too terribly different than what you hear from Republicans, and just move on and leave the weight of the problem on the shoulders of the majority, which is partially a cop-out, but then again, it's the majority and the Republican president who bear the responsibility for explaining what they're going to do in Iraq. And so while it's a cop-out and you'd like Democrats to come forward with a more full-throated view, on the other hand, the Republicans are the ones who have to answer for this set of policies.
Which brings us back to Christopher Shays. And we're going to play more now from that All Things Considered interview with Congressman Shays from Saturday. Maybe you are out having a barbecue. I guess nobody was barbecuing in that wind on Saturday, but maybe you weren't paying attention to the news like you're not supposed to do on Labor Day weekend. But Shays, as you probably know, a moderate Republican from Southwest Connecticut in our listening area, running a close race for re-election against Democrat Diane Farrell. Shays is a longtime supporter of the war in Iraq. Farrell is making that the central issue, according to her. But Shays is now changing his position, trying to nuance his position, by calling for a timetable for U.S. troops to pull out or at least stop fighting, though he says his overall position hasn't changed. We're going to play a two-minute excerpt here of Christopher Shays' interview with NPR's Debbie Elliott.
My view is the following. We know for almost a certainty the status of our being able to train their troops. In other words, we train them, we then put them into battle, so we know how many we train, we know how many stay, then we know how many become competent. My view is after a year of their being fighters, we then can say, well, we now have 10,000 Iraqi troops that can replace our 10,000 American troops and British troops that are patrolling the streets doing police work.
So let me make sure I'm understanding what you're saying. Mm-hmm. You're saying that the U.S. should have a clear timeline for no longer being the police force in Iraq.
We should have a clear timeline on replacing American troops who are doing police work with Iraqi troops. And that timeline is based on the ability of the Iraqis to do the job. We're not going to just set an arbitrary date. We know how long it takes to train a certain number of Iraqis. We know how long it takes to make them competent. When they arrive at that point, there will be a clear swapping of responsibilities, and American troops can be reduced by that amount.
But isn't that sort of what President Bush has been saying all along, that as Iraqi troops stand up, we'll stand down?
No, what President Bush has said is we have a timeline, which they don't even want to admit, but it's conditional based. I'm not making this conditionally based on what kind of circumstances exist in Iraq. If the fighting still continues as it will, we still leave. But Iraqis are taking our place doing the fighting. And the incentive to the Iraqis is, hey, I think it's a good idea that we work out our differences because that will help stop the fighting. I really believe that some of the Shias in the government want to overpower the Sunnis, and they want to use our forces to do it.
Congressman Christopher Shays in an interview with NPR's Debbie Elliott on Saturday's All Things Considered as we talk about the battle for control of Congress here on WNYC with ABC News White House correspondent Jessica Yellen and Slate.com's chief political correspondent John Dickerson. Jessica, I realize you're a White House correspondent, not a Connecticut politics correspondent, but do you have any thoughts on Christopher Shays' old position versus his new position as articulated there?
Absolutely. This is about as bad as it gets for the White House and for the Republican Party when they start to see sort of solidly loyal members of their own party fall away from them on the Iraq issue, because they can no longer say that the objection is simply partisan, and they can no longer point to weak-kneed liberals as being the only objectors. As soon as well-respected people like Shays, who's been to Iraq more than a dozen times, are also questioning the White House and the Republican Party position on Iraq, it means that this is something that they have to find a more nuanced, a different argument against. They can't just label all the critics as people who are fearful of war. It's not good, and they're afraid, frankly, that this is the beginning of a greater break from the White House and from their policy within the party.
John, any thoughts on Shays? Elsewhere in that interview, he said he's not really changing the basic underpinning of his position, and that this change is being misreported by the media. He says because he still thinks the Iraq war is a crucial mission in the war on terror, crucial for the United States to win, but he thinks the United States can win by setting a timetable for withdrawal, saying this is how long we're giving you Iraqi troops to stand up.
Well, there are a couple things going on. One, right, what he's trying to do is create some kind of metric, to use a buzzword, so that he can say to voters, and Republicans in general can say to voters, we're going towards a goal here. And so far, a lot of people aren't hearing that at all. And so it's some way to suggest that there is some kind of progress being made. The second thing that seems to be going on here is there's been a push among Republicans for quite some time now, and there have been votes in the Senate, in fact, trying to push Iraqis to basically take over control of their own country and deal with security in their own country. What politicians don't talk about so much is that in their polls it shows that the American people may support those who still support the troops and maybe even still support the mission have a negative view, many of them, of the Iraqi people. And there is this growing view that, you know, the Iraqis should step up and deal with their own problems, especially with this notion of a civil war, that the kind of it's Iraqis killing Iraqis, and why are our boys, men and women, excuse me, in the middle of all of this? And the last thing I'd point out is when Shays talks about the Shia trying to overpower the Sunnis, and U.S. Soldiers being used in that effort, this is the real danger I hear from people who know what they're talking about when it comes to Iraq, which is that our soldiers end up in one moment the Sunni think that we're working for the Shia, and the next time the reverse is the case. And so we get involved in this civil war, which is not only messy, but each side then thinks we're working for the other side, and that is just intractable and sort of totally chaotic.
Jessica, one thing from that Shays clip, he said the president also has a timetable for withdrawal. He just won't admit it. Did you hear that?
I did. This is something that the White House, it's a game almost, that the reporters play with the White House, constantly pressing them. You know, the president has all sorts of information that he's developed and that the Pentagon has developed that he just doesn't share with the public. As we all know, it's very closed White House. And the wide assumption is that he clearly knows what the ideal timetable is. It's just not something he's going to talk about.
Let's take another call. Ken in Newark, you're on WNYC. Hello, Ken.
Yes. You know, I really enjoy you media types talking in these abstractions and this race. But the fact of the matter is Bush claimed that we will be in Iraq for the three more years that he's in office. At two dead Americans a day, and on average, we're talking between 2,000 to 3,000 more American dead. We already have 65,000 wounded. This is something that the media and, quite frankly, the Democratic Party ought to really be talking about instead of this abstraction about this political race.
Ken, thank you for your call. And in fact, I think it's telling that the number of Americans dead in Iraq as we approach the fifth anniversary of September 11th is approaching the number of Americans killed on September 11th. It's about 2,600 Americans dead in Iraq. And John Dickerson, I wonder if you think that's a number that the Democratic Party dares go near. Frank Rich went there in his column in the New York Times over the weekend. Or do they think that that's too, you know, that that's somehow seen as insensitive?
I think they've been tenderfooted on a lot of this in the past, and I think they probably will stay away from that. You're mixing two difficult things there. One is people's feelings about 9/11, and two, their feelings about the troops and using the death of troops, sort of pimping the death of troops, and both parties have gotten in trouble when they've tried to do that. So my guess is Democrats would probably stay away from that. What we have been hearing over the last couple of days, though, is Democrats talking about the length of this war and how it's gone on now as long as World War II, which stays away from the body count but gets at this question of kind of war without end.
And on the question of war without end, Jessica, you said before that the president may have a timetable, as Shea says, that they're not revealing. But, you know, just a few months ago, the media were reporting that timetable was going to include some kind of substantial drawdown before these November elections, right, so they could say, hey, we're making progress. Now it no longer looks like that is going to happen because conditions are so bad in Iraq, and the White House is now more talking in terms of 3 or 4 years than saying, oh, look, we're bringing home 10 or 20,000 troops.
You're absolutely right. I mean, we were reporting that we expected some sort of drawdown before the elections. And as the White House would say, they have, quote, adjusted to realities on the ground. Clearly, that doesn't seem at all feasible. The president also did say in a recent press conference for the first time that he believes that there will still be American troops in Iraq when he leaves office, and it will be up to the next president to decide when all American troops, or a later president, when all American troops come home. His first real acknowledgement that this is a very long war. And, you know, on that point, the White House today is trying to use this idea of a long war to their advantage, to tell us to see this as a fight that could be decades long in the way that the Cold War was decades long, but as part of a broader fight that's that's part of the global war on terror.
And there's that Cold War analogy again, but polls show, at least for the moment, Americans don't even accept that the Iraq war is part of the war on terror, and I guess that's what the president, in speeches like the one planned for this afternoon, is trying to convince us that it is. We have a few more minutes with Jessica Yellen, White House correspondent for ABC News, and John Dickerson, chief political correspondent for Slate.com. Here's an email that says on Santorum, don't you think one reason Santorum is standing by his man, Bush, is so that if and when Santorum loses, he'll at least be rewarded job-wise by the party? I think it's a calculated career move. John, do you?
Well, it could be. I think probably with the stronger motivator, though, is when you're on national TV and they ask you about the president of your party, you pretty much have to stick with him. Santorum has definitely stayed away from the president in terms of having Mrs. Bush campaign for him instead of the president, and he's tried to distance himself. But when you're asked a direct question as a Republican, you have to, and especially a Republican who's that far behind and who's trying to rally his base, he couldn't just break completely with the president. And if he was going to, presumably he would have done it on his, you know, that would have been his first answer, his break with the president as a bold campaign move. But I don't think so. This is Santorum's dilemma: is he's trying to both distance himself from the president, but not too much, because then he would be like Christopher Shays, and he would be news as the Republican who's running against the White House.
Seth in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Seth.
Hi. Good morning. I'd like to make two points. One, with respect to what Christopher Shays said about a target date. The fact is, anyone that doesn't think that internally the Pentagon has kicked around many target dates, whether they are hard target dates or soft target dates, is pretty naive. I think your guess from ABC is absolutely correct. The president will not go public with a target date, but the fact is, privately, they have kicked around target dates, and there is nothing wrong with that. They have even consulted, I'm sure, with their Iraqi counterparts about target dates of when we want to leave, when we would like to leave, when we could leave. And that's basically what they're doing internally. Externally, it would be deleterious to the effort if they actually made that public.
What's your other point? We have 15 seconds.
And number two, the fact is that no one thinks in the Pentagon, in the White House, that Iraq or Baghdad is going to be like New York City as security-wise anytime soon. But the ultimate goal is to have a stable government where they, on their own, for the most part, can fight this insurgency on their own with very few American military personnel.
So as a supporter of the war, I gather,
yes.
do you see a difference between the Shays position and the Bush position?
Very slightly, but Shays is more, he's a political animal. He's fighting for his life. He's fighting for his seat, and that's basically what he's doing. And there is really, internally, I'm sure there is really, for the most part, no difference, although Shays is a Northeastern Republican, so there could be a slight difference there.
Seth, thank you very much. John Dickerson, last word in 30 seconds, another issue from Friday in Ohio. Judge throws out Ohio voter registration rules, says they appear to violate free speech, and Ohio still recounting ballots from 2004.
Well, it's just a mess, and in Ohio, Ohio is the sort of ground zero for the mess of the last election, and now we have it as the ground zero for these midterm elections in terms of the candidates that are at risk in Ohio, so it looks like, you know, we're not only going to have contested races there, but the outcome of those races will continue to be argued about, just like the ones in the last presidential election were argued about.
John Dickerson, chief political correspondent for Slate.com. Jessica Yellen, White House correspondent for ABC News. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And remember, email your issue suggestions for our coverage to Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.